Okay, with the filmmaking team of 3AM that played at the Fantasy Sci-Fi Film Festival, Jeff Wolverton and Willow Edwards. Willow is the producer, Jeff is the writer director. Nothing ever good happens at 3 a.m. But Jeff, before we get into the podcast, I want to you Chub Chubs. I know you've probably been told to ask this about a million times, but you that won the Academy Award, right? 20 years ago?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, I wrote a short animated film called The Chub Chubs. It was just called Attack of the Chub Chubs, and we shortened it to The Chub Chubs. And I was also the voice of the Chub Chubs, the little character guys, the little. And yes, I won an Academy Award.
Does the writer get an Oscar?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? No, sadly, no. Sometimes that is true. It's a whole big thing. The director gets the Oscar. I was at the Academy Awards, but they didn't include me as a nominee. They actually had to sign a piece of paper that says, well, anyways, I wasn't a nominee for that. Now, we were actually nominated for the BAFTAs as well, where I was a nominee.
Okay.
And I went to that, but we didn't win. We lost. But on that one, I did get to be a nominee, where I got all sorts of extra perks, and that was fun in London. But for the Academy Awards, I wasn't a nominee. I was up in the stands.
Well, I guess it's like they should have given you at least a piece of it, I guess, right? Like a little chunk of the
But
Oscar, I
they
guess.
did. They actually very nicely. They gave me a very nice thank you in Variety. So there was like the inside cover of Variety the next day had Sony Pictures Imageworks thanks our Academy Award nominees, list off a bunch of people, and they had my name in there.
Okay.
So I've got that I've framed and got on the wall and everything. So, but yeah, no, I was drunk up in the stands, and boy, it was dangerous because we were at the very front of the balcony, and the balcony there is only like 3 feet tall. And so when we won, the producer was sitting next to me, and we both stood up and we're like, woo, yeah, everything. And then I went to sit back down, and the seats flip up, and so my butt hit the seat, and I almost pitched forward. And this balcony is just like 2 feet tall, and I almost fell forward and killed a bunch of famous people. And it added to the fact that it was free booze and everything. And yeah, it was actually quite dangerous.
So is that
But
the was that 204 or was that 2004, 2003?
2003 was the 75th Academy Awards.
So that was Chicago, right?
No, that was in LA.
No, the Chicago won Best
Oh,
Picture.
Chicago. Well, yeah, I should guess. Sorry. The rest of the Academy Awards, I barely remember. We
Which
were
is
so
another,
excited.
no, just because Chicago, I worked on Chicago, so it was another, that's why I remember it.
Oh.
It's another,
Yes, yes.
I didn't get an Oscar either. So basically, there you
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
go.
Chicago won. I think Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas announced that, and Kirk Douglas read it, and they ripped it apart, and then they said Chicago.
Yeah, and so basically, but it's a Toronto connection because they filmed Chicago and Toronto, right? And you're from Toronto, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No, I only moved to Toronto a couple years ago, so.
Okay. Sorry, Willow, I just had to get that, I had to get that out of the way
Of
because
course, yes.
all right, so 3 a.m. you wrote the screenplay. So far cry from an animation film, let's just say that, right? I guess, right?
No, that was been out of animation for a long time. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
So tell me about the seed of this idea. Where did you kind of come up with this idea? Then I'm assuming when you wrote the script, you're wanted to shoot the film as well.
Yeah, I was walking around because I wanted to make a short and everything, but I was walking around and I had this weird thought where I saw this corner in this alley, and I was imagining a guy being there, and then kind of imagine what eventually became the first scene in 3 a.m. And originally it was going to be about this kind of deal with the devil. If somebody gives you a choice, would you make it and everything? And then the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I looked into the idea of the devil character is this person that never actually does anything, only gives you choices, never actually forces anything, makes anything happen. It's all based on our choices and everything. And then it kind of got into I wanted to know, because I've always been big on what the motivation of the bad guys are, the strength of a idea is normally based on the bad guy, because the bad guy is usually the person that makes things happen and does things. And the bad guys never want to take over the world or to blah blah blah. They always want to do something that's the same as kind of our wants and everything. And they usually don't think of themselves as the bad guy. They think of themselves as the hero. Even the worst bad guys in history thought they were saving the world. And so I kind of wanted to see how that would apply to, the kind of ultimate bad guy. What he would actually want and everything. And the more I looked into, there's a bunch of different mythologies for for the devil and Satan and everything, but they all kind of agreed on one thing, which was that he was born and created in heaven, and he was one of God's children, and he was the best the angel that ever was, and all these really great things, until he decided he wanted to not just be an angel, but actually was so big that he should be kind of a co-god or take God's place and everything. And then he was cast out. But the idea I thought was interesting was just that, I guess because I didn't know, I went to Sunday school as a kid and everything, but I didn't know all the specifics of it, but I didn't know he was an angel at all. And then it's like, oh no, he was one of the best angels, one of the very first archangels ever created. His name was Samael, and he was considered so great at bringing God's light into the world, he was renamed the Light Bringer, which in Latin was Lucifer. And there's all these things about how he was, that was what he did for a very long time. And the idea is that he was cast out, and he could no longer feel God, then probably that's what he wants. You know, his real motivation is that. That's what he wants. He doesn't necessarily want to be evil or hate humanity or anything. He wants to get his old job back. He wants to go back home. He wants his dad to love him again. And the idea that he's actually motivated by love, I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of led to the entire story.
Gotcha. So then yeah, there's layers to the when he turns heel, because basically he was an angel and he turned it like quote unquote bad, but then there's
well, that's the
layers.
thing. I think
No, I know
he
what you're
did.
saying. I'm just using layman's terms, right? So yeah, he didn't.
Yeah.
He, yeah. In terms of society, from a journalistic standpoint, he's turned bad, but from his perspective, he's doing right, I guess, right?
Yeah, he was still doing what he was doing, which was, you know, doing the Lord's work, basically. He just thought he was so good at it that he should be kind of co-God or, in charge with him and everything. And for that, he's suddenly cast out and then tries to make his own afterlife that's so bad that we call it hell and everything. And but the idea that that was taken from him and that hurts and everything, and the thing that he hates the most is that, you know, humanity, who was... we can basically disregard God's laws all we want, right? And my idea in this was kind of like, you know, we follow the laws of physics, right? But God's laws, we can kind of pick or choose. We want to take them or agree to them or not do it all. And the idea with angels, that was switched, that they didn't follow the laws of physics. They could appear anywhere and do all sorts of crap like that. But they're still, they can't lie, cheat, steal, murder, anything like that. And that neither can Lucifer. And nor does he necessarily want to. He just wants the love of his father again. But what he hates is the idea that us, these worms that live a really short time and do all sorts of terrible, horrible things, are loved by God. And he isn't. And so his whole kind of twisted logic is, if you can finally show God that these people, these things that you love are worse than me, then God will have to eventually go, oh, and then he has to love Lucifer again. If you love them, you must love me. And so his whole gag is he's just trying to show God that humanity is worse than Lucifer by their own choices. That's why he never actually forces and he does anything. It always has to be their own choice.
Gotcha.
And that's what he actually flat out says at the end when he's mad he's always mad that it doesn't work out, but thinks eventually it will. Then he'll eventually be able to show God how terrible humanity is, and then God will have to take him back, and then he'll get to go back to where he was born and raised and do his old job.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So Willow, you're the producer of the film. What did you mm-hmm. when did you first get connected to the to Jeff's project?
Well, Jeff had this project going on, and I was like, well, you know, he always has his various schemes happening, and yes.
But we're also partners.
We're partners. So. We live together. Yeah. And we were out of work. And it's like, okay, well, this is a large project. And I'm going to help you make your dream happen of making this film. And since it was mostly the two of us making the film, it was a lot of work. And it was my first outing on making a film. Mm-hmm. And my first time doing any of these things, you know, like assembling props and working with ACTRA and getting our cast and
Jessa ran the camera for most of
it. Yeah. Running the camera. Wow. Yeah. And also I had been working on some visual effects, like working on compositing. So I did a lot of the visual effects in the film. And yeah, it was just all in for both of us for a few months.
And she also had the physical ability too. We needed sometimes for cameras in an odd position, you had to stand there for a long time. And Will's got this great physical stamina, so she could actually physically do what we needed out of the cameraman, unfortunately.
So correct me if I'm wrong too, when he shows your character, Jeff, because you're also in the film, you play the man in the hat. When he shows the picture, I think you're in the picture, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah, we see her. She's the girl.
Yes.
Yeah. She's the daughter of the priest.
So you make a cameo.
Yes. Yeah. I have like one word.
Yeah. One line.
But one line. But yes, I am in the film as well.
So are you good? Would you do it again? This seems like a film school for a project. Like it seems like an educational project for you. You probably learned a ton.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Well, we are doing it again.
You're doing it again.
Working on another one, completely different story, but yeah, a different one.
Oh, it's because it seems like this project is like almost like a proof of concept. There's like a bigger project here.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah, no, I have kind of outlined an actual film of this called The Man in the Hat. And if you watch the post-credit sequence, it kind of like hints and leads at that and everything. And if we could get funding, yeah, I would love to make the feature film version of everything. But while that's going and to learn more, we're also making another short film now that we're kind of in the throes of. But again, it's kind of just to get more learning abilities under our belt and different film techniques and working with more people and more of an advanced concept kind of thing.
So
there was get funding for a film, we would do it.
I lived in Toronto for a long time, and the films get passed to me, and I'm watching your film for the first time. I think your first scene in the film is like Sherbourne and Wellesley area, correct?
Oh, very good. It's right off of Sherbourne. Yeah, there's a little place called Gabby's.
Yeah.
You might know Gabby's restaurant, and it's right next to that. There's this kind of school, and it had this big parking lot, and we're filming there at like literally late at night. At one point, it went till 3 a.m.
We wrapped our final day of filming at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So
the reason why I know that, because I lived in that neighborhood, like literally a block away from where you shot for 4 years. So basically that's why I knew it. It's the Roger sign in the background, right? Background, like that's on Jarvis Street, right? So I can figure out where you are geographically.
You probably recognize the bridge then, because the bridge is the Sherbourne, like Sherbourne and Bloor. The bridge they tried to throw exactly himself off.
Where the subway station right there. Yeah.
Yep. That's across the street from where we live.
I lived a half a decade there. Yeah, exactly. So okay, so tell me about that. Tell me about locations, because you got that. I'm sure you're just kind of. You're just ripping off the scene, which is great. But you got you're in a condo and you're in a lobby. Where'd you guys, was this all kind of your locations that you guys live
in? Yeah, it's basically the apartment is our apartment complex, and the hallway is the hallway outside of our apartment. And we wanted to keep everything nearby. So that school is kind of like where we shot the parts. We actually see the man in the hat. And then the bridge is the bridge right across the street. Basically wanted to keep everything close so the crew and people show up and then we can go out and film it and then come back. And if we need to get other props and things we'd forget and everything, gaffer state, and do everything. So it's all kind of done nearby. Yeah. And then there is no hospital. That was basically Willow's bedroom that we made to look like a hospital bed.
100%. You played the man in the hat. You're kind of setting up the plot, your character. Did you always want to play that guy? Because it's kind of a great character. Like it's a great character to play. Were you always keen on playing that?
Oh, it was loads of fun. Yeah, no, because I spent a lot of time walking around and coming up with dialogue and then thinking of things that he would say, what he would want, what he would need, what he would do, and also his general kind of reptilian glee for this whole thing, because he obviously is very proud of, and that's this big sin that he's cast to heaven for, pride, right? Yeah. So he's very proud of when his manipulations work, and that's why one of the things he actually says at one point, he keeps trying to say, hey, you want to know how I got this? He's very proud of what he did to get it, and nobody ever wants to hear that. They just want to go on to they either punch him or they want to know, how to get what they want. But his kind of glee in what he does, he's obviously very proud of himself. And his whole desperation only shows up at the end. Most of it, it's kind of his, these are the only people he gets to talk to. He used to talk to angels and God and everything. And now the only things he can interact with are human beings that he kind of detests. Yeah. But he does at least enjoy, take some happiness and pride in what he does. And so that kind of fun of the character and everything was mostly from walking around wearing the hat and wearing the outfit and just kind of thinking of what he would say and what his life was like.
And what about the other cast? So you had so Marcus, obviously he's like the guy who played Bob, was his name Bob, right?
Yeah, he was named Bob. Yeah, Marcus is great. We do a lot of improv, and Marcus has been on improv teams with us, and we've both done improv with him many times. And he has this kind of frantic energy. He's like this guy that never sits still, and he's constantly moving and everything. And so he seemed great for like an addict that was all over the place kind of thing. And he's so great to work with. And he's actually like booming in our next short and everything. And the thing we learned is like, you definitely like working with people that you enjoy working with.
Yeah.
And he was a blast. And he was also a trooper because we're going in the middle of the night.
It was cold when we were filming too. It was so cold. We were trying to get the still shot of his hand. So it's like, oh, his hand stopped shaking. He's like, yeah, it's so cold outside. Yeah, he was definitely, he was in it to get it done.
Yeah, we're doing this in December. And the gag is he's an addict who shakes and then has to stop. So I'm like, oh, yeah, have your hand shake and then have it stop shaking. And he couldn't do that because it was freezing. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have to make it so you can do this one time.
And then you got the priest, right, who shows up like later on in the film, which is a key
role
because it's, you know, it's hard to cast a priest, right? Like they gotta be a priest.
For that, we actually needed to, we actually went to a casting agent, not agency, the casting like website and auditioned a couple different people because it's hard to find people that are old enough. We wanted like a 70-year-old white haired old man, and the people that mostly responded looked like, you know, they were 50 or something, they had black hair.
And all of our friends in improv are also.
Yeah, our friends in improv are way too young. They're like, you know, kids, they're like 29. So, fortunately, finally found Patrick, and sure, his father used to be a priest or something.
Yeah,
so
he actually brought quite a bit of knowledge about what the, like, he helped with the costume. We had some costume stuff, and he was like, no, it would look this way and that way. Like, his father was an Anglican priest, so that was helpful to us.
Yeah, it had to be an Anglican priest, because he has to have to be a priest that's a lot of kids, since he's got a daughter, so.
But when they, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, because it's a film, but he... When he shows up at the door, he's in his priest outfit. That's what they're always in, the priest outfit, the priests.
I know.
You know what? No, Patrick came up with a very good rationale for this.
Yeah.
He could be on his way he's on his way to the hospital to see his daughter.
Right.
And he wants to get maximum service out of the healthcare professionals.
Right. Gotcha. It might be that. Yeah. Exactly.
You need context. You need to show that the audience who they are, right? So.
There were also some crosses hanging on the wall when he opens the door to show that he's always got crosses ready to go.
Yeah. He was great. It's a brief. He's in the film briefly, but it's an important character, right? So.
Yeah.
So you guys kind of worked on that. You guys are like, it's almost like a two-man show, this film. But did you, in terms of like, it's a nicely directed film. It's like nice shot list.
Thank you.
Did you like storyboard things? Like, how did you kind of prep? Because, you know, you're kind of like running on the fly, it seems like, when you're making the film.
No, we didn't storyboard it, but there was a big getting the shot list. And because I had a lot of ideas in my mind of where especially that final shot where we've got the man that had the foreground and the priest in the background. And there were various different shots I definitely wanted to hit. But it was very much making a spreadsheet. Try to use a couple different like software things for shot lists. They usually have a bunch of boxes that I didn't need. What I wanted was just a shot list that had, you know, shot name, what kind of shot it is, what angle it is, where it is in the script, and a couple other things. And so we'd make this big spreadsheet that and have the script itself marked up with chunks of these things so we could go through and shoot it. And then we had all that. And then, when you're actually out there, it's kind of hard because there's only so many of us and we're trying to look through all these pages.
Assistant director or anybody else, a script supervisor, anybody. We didn't have anybody looking over this for us as we were filming, so it was difficult.
We basically got a bunch of crap that we got. It has the pages and it has the printouts and everything, and we're keeping it with us and moving around and all these
places. We just have the two, like for a lot of that, we just have the two actors and me holding the camera, so and it's cold outside, so it's hard to, but we did do some storyboarding in terms of like just going out there before we actually filmed.
Right.
With a camera
and
just like, you know, taking pictures of some of the angles that we thought we might want.
Yeah. Just taking stills to kind of make a storyboard that way of just like, here's how it might work. Cause we also didn't have permits for a lot of this. We're kind of like running and gunning and hoping we don't get rousted, which we did occasionally. Cause like that place that you probably know is probably not necessarily allowed to film there, but the janitor, fortunately, was really nice, and we told him what we were doing. I think it's like a religious school too, so I didn't mention the whole devil thing. But we were just like, yeah, can we film over here? It'll just be, you know, we'll be relatively quiet. Won't take a lot of time. And he was like, oh, sure. Because, yeah, if you look through one of those windows, you can see a picture of Jesus on the wall. So it's some sort of religious school or something.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's like, yeah, because it's just like a really like, you know, like it's a 20 minute, but you guys, it doesn't like we were talking, we're kind of breaking down the film, but it doesn't look like it's a, like a low, low budget film. And like where you guys kind of did multiple roles, like kind of looks like a professional film. So you guys achieved your goals.
Yeah, the hard part was like, you know, when after Marcus puts her down, you know, he's taking the blood from her the first time, he's running down the hallway. The idea is supposed to be running down the hallway, screaming and pounding on doors and everything. But, you know, it's our hallway that we can't necessarily film in. So we had to do that like completely silent. And I was telling Marcus, you know, just pretend you're screaming, pretend you're hitting doors and everything. And I'm running backwards with the camera. He's doing that. But he couldn't actually hit the doors. So he comes pretty close. That's why you go this flash to white and these sound hits and everything to kind of hide the fact that he's, you know, initially filmed it, we're like, oh God, you can definitely tell he's nowhere near the door. But it was tricks like that that we eventually came up with to hide the various, you know, low budget problems that we had. So
tell me about post-production then. Are you, when you're like, you're finished shooting, are you happy with the footage you got? You think you got yourself a film when you're looking through the footage?
Yeah, we're going through, fortunately, did do a lot of takes, which is great. And the more we learned about it, the more it was kind of like, if you do 10 takes, you probably don't need to look at takes 1 through 5. It's basically usually 7, 8, 9, or 10 that you actually use because the actors just get better at it. The camera person gets better at it. Everything gets better towards the end and everything. And then there was a little bit of visual effects to add some stuff in the background and blurring out the background. There's a little bit of compositing that we had to do and color timing and things like that. There wasn't necessarily, I tried to make it intentionally, I do visual effects for film. And so I tried to make it so it wasn't going to be some kind of visual effects movie. I wanted it something that had very little, if any, visual effects. But in the end, we did have to add like smokestacks in the background. You probably saw that in places that there are no smokestacks. There's no smokestacks near the Rogers building, as you know. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to have something moving back there because it was so static.
It looked like it was cut out in front of a green screen. It was too still.
Yeah.
The background, even though it wasn't.
Yeah, because there was no clouds and birds or anything, so it was all kind of dead. So we did some compositing to throw some things in there and other tricks.
Well, also we blurred the background in post because we shot it on an iPhone.
Okay.
And the iPhone, everything was more or less in focus. So that was another reason why it kind of looked cut out.
Yeah, so threw things out of focus back there, and that took a lot of work. And there'd be things like there was this weird, super bright blue fence that they had for some reason. I don't know why.
Like a construction temporary fence.
Yeah, and
yeah.
We couldn't get rid of it and physically move it.
When we were shooting it and I was shooting at it, I was like, oh no, like there's no way to shoot around this hideous fence.
Yeah.
So but we successfully took the blue out of it. It's a gray fence in the finished film.
Yeah, so it's not the brightest thing.
Yeah.
You want to make sure.
You mean this is the fence at the end of the film? There's that fence.
No, this is a fence that's in, yeah, it's in the end of the at the end of the film. It was basically just in the parking lot. They had a weird bright blue painted fence there.
Yeah.
And so we made it very desaturated and dark.
Yeah, you do see it at the end of the film.
Yeah. It's just not very noticeable because we basically tried to desaturate just that and not everything else.
Yeah.
And that took some fooling around.
We also had to deal with the rain in that final shot because it was raining on and off the night we shot it.
Yeah.
And we got really lucky with weather that it ran, that we shot it more or less in order and it rained on just the final day. It would have sucked if it was raining in the early shots and like not raining
it
in the last
works for the film. Like it does. Cause it,
but that was a happy accident.
But the problem was it's raining on and off. Some of the shots had rain in them and some of the shots didn't have rain in them.
Yeah.
So we had to add some rain in post as well.
Because you know the weather is in Toronto. It might rain for like 10 minutes and then stop.
Yeah.
And then correct me if I'm wrong, the end scene too, it's like when you're your character's talking, it's like you have the school bus behind you, right? And it wasn't there earlier.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool effect.
It's a school parking lot, so there's a bunch of school buses.
Yeah.
I couldn't do anything about that. So
no, it's
we're originally gonna. It was originally gonna be actually in that weird little hall, you know, in the Rogers building. You can actually walk underneath it.
Yeah.
I wanted to film it there because it was really brightly lit, and it just had the background was just bricks and stuff. And that was the plan, because that's where I was walking when I was coming back from Rabba's and came up with the idea. And I was like, oh, this would be great. And so we went and did some tests there and filmed some tests there. And then we went to actually shoot it. Security guard came out and said, you can't film here. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, we came here and we filmed a bunch of tests yesterday. And they're like, yeah, we saw you on the cameras. And we decided if you came back, we'd say you couldn't do that. And I was like, oh. And so that's when we went to our backup location, which was the school that had asked them to do it there. But it ended up being a better location.
It ended up being a way better location.
Yeah. That's just pricks being pricks, right? So, like, maybe they're in charge of
something. Yeah. I know. Yeah. And I actually tried to contact them. They were like, well, maybe you can film if you contact this person. So I sent that person an email and several emails, and no response yet.
Yeah. You'll never get a response, right? So,
no, they did not care. That's what you gotta do, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so cool. So you got yourself a 20-minute film. So like shot on iPhone, like, yeah. Do you guys feel good at the end product?
Yeah. No, I'm very happy about how it turned out. There was a lot of things we didn't quite know what was going to happen or how it was going to turn out, and I think it went pretty well. And the little post credit sequence, again, the weather in Toronto is very flaky, but it was finally very much late December, was super super snowing just once. And I was like, oh, this is where we'll run out and do it. And it was like, and I grabbed Widow and was like, grab the outfit. And I'm like, let's go film this. We just need this one scene of the guy, the man in the hat, standing there looking up at a building. And that was the only time it snowed like that we could do that. So I wanted to show that it was much later and have this neat kind of snow blowing kind of effect and everything. And that's also Willow's voice you hear in the post-credit scene, the crazy businesswoman that's obviously gotten herself in a lot of trouble. And so that's Willow doing the voiceover for that. But that worked out really well too, I think. Yeah. So,
I mean, for me, having never made a film before, the whole process of doing it is like, well, you know, we're just doing it, right? We're just getting it done. And I didn't really have any expectation as to what it would be, as to how it would turn out. I was, and also by the time you're done watching it, like, or the time you're done making it, you've watched it like 50 times and gone over every scene with a fine tooth comb. So it has no meaning to me. And watching it with people for the first time, it was shocking. It's like, wow, it's actually a thing that we did.
Yeah. I
keep that laughing. Was my experience. Yeah.
People laughing at parts. Yeah. Yeah. Willow's used to acting on stage where it's an improv where it's, you do this once and then you get a laugh or you don't get a laugh and you move on and do these things. Yeah. There isn't a lot of repetition.
And also immediate feedback you get on stage. Yes. Whereas something like this, which just in terms of feedback, there's none. It's just kind of this thing that you're doing and it's dead in a way until it's done. It doesn't.
I think with the same thing with Marcus, you get people that are stage actors aren't used to this dead silent response.
Yeah.
And you know, afterwards, I'd be like, that was really great.
Yeah.
But, you know, during it, I'm just deadpan because I'm either holding camera or I'm acting as the other guy. And so there's no feedback. And so, it is great to get the feedback from places and festivals and stuff.
What did you think about, we send you the audience feedback video. You kind of set me up here. What did you guys think of that video that we sent you?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that was great to hear people that actually saw it and what they thought and their feedback on it was great. Because, I was worried about like when some things wouldn't come across or they wouldn't get who the man in the hat is, because we never explicitly say who he is or what he's talking about. We never say God, devil, anything like that. But we just strongly imply everything. And it was great to hear. They definitely seemed to get it and they seemed to like it and come up with things that I hadn't even thought of, when they're kind of like, oh yeah, the way the people strip, you know, addiction strips the blood from you and kind of things like that. And I was like, oh, that's a neat kind of subtle second level I hadn't thought about.
Cool. Yeah, it is fascinating to see people's responses to it and to have people watch it. It's still a strange feeling for me.
It's great though. It's great to get in-depth feedback like that from people. Because, I mean, we showed it to friends and everything, but they're always like, oh, great, great. I mean, it's wonderful. They don't get, you know, deep into here's exactly what I think of specifically in this, that, and the other. You don't get actual, you know, useful feedback, which is what was cool about that that stuff you sent us.
No, cool. All right. Well, I guess you guys are working on another project, and I guess we can talk again when you guys make your next film.
Yeah. No. And I would love to, like I said, if we can get a way to get Man in the Hat going, I would totally do that. So that's another thing we're going to try to think of, and might, I have a rough outline of the script and everything, so we're probably gonna keep for a feature version.
Yeah
we'll kind of keep going on that too. So
yeah, there's something there. It's a good, like you said, it's a good proof of concept. It kind of shows that what you can do, You know what I mean? And add $5 million to it and see what you can like do with that, right? No, seriously, right? Yeah. It shows people that.
Yeah, well, the 10th, yeah.
Save the budget of your film, but I saw it on, it, people make stuff budgets all the time, but basically on Film Freeway, you set the budget. So if you can use it, do the film for that amount of money, and see, I can guarantee you most of it went to Actra. And basically, for someone who does budgets, basically, like if you could do it for that, then basically think what you can do for like times 1,000, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
All right, let's talk again when you guys make your next film. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good one.